Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Support WrestleTalk.
Donate on Patreon.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Luke Owen and I'm joined by Elfacador Laurie Blake.
Hello,
how are you, man?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
Not too bad. If you are new to the Wrestle Ramble podcast and you're thinking like, oh, I'm expecting these guys to talk about some wrestling, we're unfortunately going to talk about movies first. Because you and I last night went to a press screening. Well, the multimedia screening.
I don't know what that means.
It's
there's loads of laptops in the audience.
Yeah, so multimedia screenings, like press screenings are just like, that. It's just the press that
it's
are there.
Press, yeah.
Whereas like with multimedia screens, they tend to give it to like influencers as well. And like you know, members of the general unwashed get to go to these sort of screenings.
Gross.
So we were in the...
I should have had two showers this week.
We were in Leicester Square at the Cineworld IMAX screen Glass, which Michael Cole will have told you is out this Friday in theatres. I think it's out Friday here in the UK as well. I'm not sure.
The review is out Thursdays, isn't it? The release cycle in the UK.
Yeah. So reviews for it have not been great. It's currently at like 38% on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm. It might have creeped up to 40%. I would say that 37%, if this was a percentage-based game, is fair as
yes.
to what this film is.
Yes, it is a film, I think, characterised by the fact that... the only saving grace in this film, I believe, is James McAvoy.
Oh, God, yeah.
Who is giving it his absolute all as Wendell Crumb.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Wendell Crumb, the multiple personality serial killer from Split. He is so committed to that role.
Yeah.
And it stands in stark contrast to one Mr. Bruce Willis, who could not be trying any less.
I have seen some sleepy performances from Bruce Willis in my time. This was the sleepiest of sleepy Bruce Willis performances.
He's not even phoning it in anymore.
No, he's
getting
not.
He's getting his secretary to phone it in. That's how bad he is.
Like. It's so bad how little he cares. Like, I'm pretty sure he stopped acting in movies about 10 years ago, but it just makes me think, why are you bothering then?
Well, I don't
know. If you're not going to try, why do you keep making films?
Money.
Well,
money!
It's not like he's not got a lot of money on his hands.
Well, what I don't understand about it as well is, like, if you're a director, what direction are you giving him where you're going, yeah, that's fine. Like, you know, it's fine. Because I get the fact that he does play, generally speaking, people cast Bruce Willis as mildly dour characters. You know, John McClane is quite a dour character. He's quite, like, put upon, grumpy, but he's quite funny with it.
Yeah.
Back when Bruce Willis gave a crap.
Yeah, like, he cared.
Now, they only get the bit where he just feels really put upon about everything.
That he's had to show up for work.
Yeah,
when do I get to go home?
I'm going to be famous today.
Kevin's
so annoying.
Kevin Smith tells a story, though, when he was working with Willis on Live Free or Die Hard, which I think was the fourth one. It was the one with Kevin Smith as a cameo in.
Mm.
And Bruce Willis, like...
This is the one where he jumps the plane in. Like, he jumps the car into the helicopter.
Into
the jet.
Is it a jet?
Yeah, it's a jet. They go off the central reservation on the freeway and into a jet.
It felt like a generic
action. That's when he went from like police officer in tower to he's a superhero.
Yeah. And Smith tells the story that, like, Len Wiseman, the director, was, like, really beaten up by the film and just looked tired and really dejected. And Smith tells the story that he quickly learned that this film, this schedule is not operating on whatever timetable the director has made. It's operating on Bruce Willis time, because Bruce Willis will just show up when he's ready, and you just then have to accommodate for whatever Bruce wants when he shows up.
What a pillock.
The story is that, like, this was meant to be like a one day shoot thing, end up being like a couple of days, because Bruce Willis showed up, looked at the pages that they were shooting, and said, like, I don't like any of these, rewrite it.
Oh my god.
Actually got Kevin Smith to rewrite it. So that scene in there was rewritten by Kevin Smith on the day that they were meant to be shooting it.
Wow.
And Wiseman had to call Fox. Well, Fox called to be like, why are you behind schedule? And he said, like, well, you know, let's speak to Bruce Willis. And so Kevin Smith heard the... he didn't hear the Fox side of the conversation, but he heard Bruce Willis' side of the conversation, which essentially boiled down to, well, let me ask you one question. Who was your second choice to play John McClane? And then after a pause, was like, yeah, that's what I thought. Hung up with the phone and was like, yeah, we're going with my version.
Wow.
And that's probably what was happening here. It was like, who was your second choice to play David Dunn?
Yeah.
You haven't got one.
Just kill him off. I don't know. And I think that was obviously a problem in this film, that Bruce Willis was a very distant character.
Oh, wasn't he just? But it's not like David Dunn was like a massively charismatic character anyway.
No,
but
absolutely not.
He feels even more distant from that.
Yeah, and then I feel like it... Then it was... And the rest of the film is like this weird bottle episode of them in this psychiatric ward, where apparently there were other patients, but we didn't find that out until the end because... extras are expensive, aren't they? But like, I don't know. This whole thing felt like it was trying to be this highfalutin treatise on believing in yourself and the nature of sort of being a hero or having powers or, you know, like being, even just like being geeky and having people like sort of rib on you for being geeky. And it just wasn't, I don't think it pulled off anything it was trying to do. Like,
yeah.
There was this big, like, genius end game that Glass has set up, and I won't spoil it in case you do actually happen to want to watch this film that we've just described as 37% on. But if you do, yeah, there's this huge end game where it's like, aha, aren't I so clever, like Mr. Glass saying,
like Unbreakable,
like, yeah, like Mr. Glass is saying through proxy of M. Night Shyamalan. But, like, you know, is M. Night Shyamalan speaking through Mr. Glass, am I not so clever that I've done this thing? And it was like, no, like, yeah. I don't. None of what you've done feels like it's magic. Because I also feel like this whole end point to be like, so sort of the end game is that they want to get out the idea that superheroes exist to people.
Yeah.
However, earlier in the film, there are shots of the Overseer.
Which is Bruce Willis's.
Which is Bruce Willis's nickname that the press have given him while he wears the green mat, goes around saving people. There are shots of him people have taken on CCTV cameras, on their phones, whatever, doing superhero stuff.
Yeah.
The end game of this is like, they're trying to get to somewhere so that the world will see them do things. Anywhere you go, people would see you do it, because you cannot go anywhere or do anything stupid without someone filming it now on their phone. It just feels like this whole end game was just like, why does it have to be this very specific way to do it?
Yeah, it's funny as well, because everything that M. Night Shyamalan is trying to say about the superhero genre, he said in Unbreakable 19 years ago, or whatever it was, you know, like, so he's already said this. He's added nothing new to what he said in Unbreakable. And that's remarkable, considering that this one is now like a cross-universe movie where that's the big rage at the moment, right? Like this sort of like shared universe thing. You'd think that he'd want to make a commentary on that, but he doesn't.
No.
He makes zero commentary on that.
Yeah.
It's a really... So not only is it quite a boring movie, because it's 2 hours and 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
And...
I was just praying for scenes in which James McAvoy was in.
Yeah.
Every time any other scene was in it, all the... Because all the other characters were exposition people. They were just like there to just... I'm here to say what's happening. It's like, he, I know what's happening.
He is a 5-star performance in a 2-star movie.
Yeah, he's incredible.
And that 2 stars might be slightly
different. I want to see Split 2. I am sad that Kevin Wendell Crumb had to be in this film. Like, yeah. I was like, you've ruined that now.
And it's, so the film is, it's 2 hours and 10 minutes long. And all these sort of stuff that the trailer builds up, you've got to build to that point. But a problem is, like, to build to that point takes an hour and 45 minutes. Mm. And it is an hour and 45 minutes of not very interesting conversation. You could have used that hour and 45 minutes to do so much more character diving, so much more, like drilling down who these characters are, why they are the way that they are, the superhero genre, multi-universe cinematic experiences. But it doesn't. It's just an hour and 45 minutes of chat. Banal chat that then leads into this sort of final sequence, which, by the way, is some of the worst action I've ever seen in terms of the way that it's shot and directed.
Oh my god,
this whole film is shot in extreme close-up.
Yes, but there's also it's a superhero film in which the superheroes, when they confront each other, like, you know, how exciting was it the first time in Avengers where Thor and Iron Man have that fight.
Yeah.
And Captain America is there as well. Drops in.
He's like, the one who, like, he stops the fight and gets him to break it up.
Oh yeah. So, like, that whole scene is the first time you see all these guys meet each other, and in classic superhero fashion, they end up fighting even though they're all on the same side. Brilliant. Here, these guys are genuinely enemies. And when they face off against each other, the most they can muster is pushing each other into the nearest wall, pushing away, turning around, and then pushing them back into the wall. That's all that happens in this film.
It's like a Kane Big Show match.
Yeah, it is.
We'll go into the corner and do some strength, and then we'll just go to another corner and we'll just push each other a bit. Strong. And that's sort of it. You're completely right. It's so boring, the action sequences. But, worse, it's all shot in extreme close-up, which is made even worse when it's on IMAX. So all three of us walked out that film with a headache.
Yeah.
Because it's so... It's, everything's so close-up. But it's also shot, a lot of times, on chest rigs. So this is a reference...
It's like the Sir Digby Chicken Caesar.
Well, I was about to say, this is a reference that really only for British listeners, but it is Sir Digby Chicken Caesar.
Yeah.
Like, it's that, but for a fight scene in a comic book movie. If you're not one of our British listeners, go to YouTube and search for Sir Digby Chicken Caesar. A, it's hilarious.
Oh, I love Sir Digby.
But B, it will tell you exactly what to expect from these fight sequences. Because it's all then, it's close-ups. It's extreme close-ups shot from chest height.
Yeah.
It just looks pants.
And then they had this, like, whole conspiracy angle thing, and that was...
Yeah.
I didn't understand. I was like, I'm totally underwhelmed by whatever this is. Like, this big reveal at the end. There's a whole storyline that when they're in the psychiatric hospital, the woman who is evaluating...
Poor old Sarah Paulson.
Yes.
Once again, wasted on the big screen.
Yeah,
bloody love Sarah Paulson.
She's really good.
She's so good.
But, like, she's evaluating them and trying to convince them that they're not superheroes because otherwise they'll have to spend the rest of their lives in institutions. And, like... They so quickly just go, yeah, maybe I'm not.
Yeah, like, it's one chat.
It's like literally Bruce Willis has bent steel, punched holes in walls all without break. They fell out of a window at the beginning of the film that was 5 stories up and they were both fine.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, maybe I'm not a superhero.
Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm just I'm a normal guy.
Yeah, maybe I'm just not a superhero. It's like, you are! You idiot!
We've proven this time and time again. So it's not a great movie. I would give it a big shrug of the shoulders, a big, like, Alan Partridge style shrug.
I'd give it a long sigh, I think. That's my review.
Dude, never see it on IMAX because it will give you a headache. Like, there are so many shots in this movie of people typing on computer screens, but you're not seeing the people typing. You're watching the screen with the words appear up. So it's this bright white computer screen in extreme close up on IMAX. It's like, I've got really good vision, but I was like, oh, good great. I'm like, it strains your eyes.
I don't get, like, it's worth watching purely if you... I feel like you're better off watching Split. But if you really liked Split and you love James McAvoy, watch it for him.
Yes. Yeah.
he should not be giving it as much as he's giving it. Actually, like, he should have turned up on the first day, done his bit, seen Bruce Willis half-arsing it, and gone,
it's
down.
That what we're doing then? Okay.
All right, well, I'm going to choose whichever one of the personalities is the blandest, and I'll be him from now on.
Yeah, real shame for...
Who else are you going to get to play Kevin Wendell Crumb?
Yeah, poor old Mac Attack. So anyway, that's our review of Glass. I hope you enjoyed it. We're actually going to talk about some wrestling now. It's NXT time. We're going to be talking about the Street Profits, how awesome they are, and why they should be in a much better feud. Here's the show.
This was a fine show, I guess.
It was pretty good. There was a couple of quite good matches in this. Some interesting promo work going on. But
bloody love Bianca Belair's work.
Yeah, that was very good. I liked some of what Shayna Baszler said. I think it was a pretty good show overall.
Yeah. But
some weird choices, though.
Yes, but we are here to start off this show talking about the opening contest, which was between Street Profits and Chris and JC Metro. But that really was
just
more of a
pair of greasers, mate. Just a pair of greasers.
Just
a couple of T-birds.
I'll be honest, I got to spend most of this time. Like, my opening notes for this is like, is this the greasers from SmackDown in 2006? What were their names? They were from the other side of the tracks or something. Their manager was on roller skates. One of them was Snooker's kid? Deuce and Domino, that was it. So I missed like the start of the match because I was so busy Googling who they were. Could not remember what they were called. But either way, this match was more of a backdrop, really, for the post-match angle in which the Street Profits, following their promo last week where they were putting the NXT Tag Team Division on notice in that very, very weird little backstage skit that they did, brilliant. Which was wonderful.
Excellent.
The Forgotten Sons came out of nowhere and attacked them and left them laying. Quite a brutal beatdown by Cutler, Jackson Ryder, and the other one.
Blake?
Not Buddy Murphy.
No, Blake.
Blake, yeah.
Who I remember, for we share a surname.
That's why I should have remembered it, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I nearly called him
the
Buddy Murphy.
The reason I can't be a WWE wrestler with my real name.
No,
can't be another Blake.
Can't have a two of them. Otherwise, they'd just make you brothers.
Yeah, oh my God, I don't want to be his brother.
You could be part of the Forgotten Sons and have the crowd chant, "Stay Forgotten."
Yeah. We forgot you. Yeah, and then they kept being like, for the whole bit as well, like, "You won't forget us now." It's like, we forgot you already. Like, every time I blink, I forget you're there.
Yeah, we were making fun of the Forgotten Sons in our NXT in review because they were up for like the top prospects or whatever it was. We haven't actually had the results of the NXT awards yet because it's so hard for them to count.
Yes.
Because it's a ridiculous system using Twitter. But anyway, so they came down. They did a pretty wicked beatdown on the Street Profits, in all fairness to them. But the crowd really won. I would say that they did get some heat, but it never felt like it was, we don't like you because you're beating up the Street Profits. It's more like, we just don't like you.
Yeah, just, you're a bit naff, aren't you? So,
yeah,
I don't know.
And I think that coupled with the "we forgot you" chants and "stay forgotten," it feels like Drifter heat. It's the Elias heat that he was getting in NXT, which was never like, "Boo, you're a heel." It's more like, "God, you're just rubbish."
Yeah, it's a "you again" heat.
"You again." Oh God.
"You again." Oh, my Lord.
I
please.
Could really do without you right now. And it's kind of like, it's a shame for the Street Profits.
Absolutely.
Because as the title of this video suggests, Street Profits have been in NXT now for, I think this is probably getting into their second year. This is their third year, actually.
Dawkins has been around a long time.
Yeah, Dawkins has been around forever, really. But them and Ford as a tag team, I suppose we're probably getting into their third year now, or around about that point for them as a tag team. And they've just done nothing.
No, they've had a few sort of flirtations with the idea of ever getting a title shot. Never really done it. Had a feud over a cup. And then mostly do sort of squash matches or showcase matches. And they're definitely worth more than that.
Absolutely.
I think this match showed you, like, even though it was, you know, beating up the two Kanickis, was just like a sort of an obvious beatdown. However, they put on quite a good display. They were a bit, you know, they were saying in their promo last week they were going to be more aggressive, they were going to go after things. And they came out acting more aggressive, but still got laughs and just showed off the bit where they were pushing each other and they pushed Ford over and he's like,
Yeah, so they were doing like the pushing. If you haven't seen it, they were pushing each other in the chest to psych each other up. Dawkins got too psyched up and pushed Ford down, and he took this big bump and then had this terrified look on his face like, uh-oh.
But then he gets up on the apron and Dawkins slaps down one of the greasers.
Yeah.
And on the apron, Ford just goes,
like, amazing ripperoo, like, yes, last
so good. They're brilliant. They're really good. And there was, you know, there was, yeah, Don't Sleep on Me Boy. They were, yeah, they're so charismatic. They're so good. Like, Dawkins slightly less charismatic than Montez Ford, and everyone, that's a complaint people make. However, I think Montez Ford is like living charisma.
Well, that's
isn't
what
he?
I mean.
It's just like it's impossible to be as charismatic as him. He's so charismatic.
That's kind of my point, is that Montez Ford literally is like the living embodiment of charisma. Mm. And Dawkins, his one thing is he puts his arm out and then swirls the other one around like a big old mixing bowl.
I think he's probably very charismatic. He just doesn't look it in comparison to the person he stood next to.
I think, because I've never been a Dawkins fan. Mm. Like, I thought the Curse of Greatness gimmick never really got over. This whole pot thing never really got over. But
that got over. People were doing that.
But I think that's
the
entrance,
people were like,
I think that's because of Ford, though. Yeah, that was what I was going to say, is I think Ford is bringing the best out of Dawkins. Mm. And I think Dawkins now feels more over because he's aligned with Montez Ford, because Ford is... he's so good. Mm. He's so charismatic. It's ludicrous how impressive he is.
He's incredibly athletic as well. I just think this... yeah, and I just... it's a shame that we've had this pointless feud with the Mighty, who were never a threat. Like, you know, bless them, the Mighty have been languishing in NXT for a very long time and now aren't. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they never really had any sort of... even when they heel turned, they didn't really have any heat behind them. Nobody really cared. Nobody thought they were actually... ever going to be like one of the top tag teams. So having them feud, especially in a brand where feuds normally are for titles, most people aren't just having feuds. There's one other feud ever in NXT usually, and it's currently the feud that is the other feud is Riddle and Ono.
Yeah.
And that is the only other story really existing outside of title matches.
Yes, at least like for like things, a takeover card.
Yeah, exactly. But I think mostly, like in general, everything else seems to be sort of like, you know,
TV filler. But yes, I don't think that's the worst thing. Like, you and I have said that what NXT needs more of are these sorts of feuds that you can fill up TV time with and build to like a big TV payoff match.
Yes.
And I think you can certainly argue that that's the case here for Street Profits and I've forgotten their name, it's the Forgotten Sons. The irony. But my issue with it more, and it's the same thing with the Mighty, is that this is not the Street Profits feuding with a top team in NXT. This is them constantly feuding with teams that are below them. And that's not elevating Street Profits, nor is it elevating the people they're facing. No. It's bringing them down. Like, they're not feuding with Burch and Larkin, you know, after their NXT title picture last year. They're not feuding with War Raiders, or they're not feuding with any of these other tag teams. Mm. They're feuding with teams that are below them, and it's not advancing them at all in the division.
And it doesn't make the other guys look good either.
No.
It's not going to make the Forgotten Sons any more cared about, is it? Like, or even get, like, they're not even getting the kind of heat I feel that they're after with this. Is like, the Forgotten Sons beat down the Street Profits. Everybody loves the Street Profits with the sippy cup and all that stuff. So you must be cross at the Forgotten Sons. Everyone's just going, oh, why are you here?
Yeah. And I think that really is. It's the Forgotten Sons don't have real heat at the moment.
They've got go away heat.
Yeah, please, more or less.
Please leave.
If this was a channel that you could change over, they would have changed the channel heat. But we haven't really come up with a term, turn the network off heat.
Yeah, pause it, never come back.
Yeah.
Or skip ahead
use
heat.
That skip 10 seconds button that they've got on there. Like,
I mean, it's a terrible app to
keep
navigate.
Keep skip 10 seconds on the website version. Can keep skipping
come
this
on,
until they're
come
off.
Come on.
But I think there's so much that could be done with the Street Profits in 2019. I've got really high hopes for them. I think that once that the Undisputed Era finish up with their War Raiders feud, which I kind of expect Undisputed Era to come out on top of.
Yes.
I think. Like, I haven't really made a decision. We're not going to... because Royal Rumble's next weekend, which therefore means that TakeOver Phoenix is next weekend as well. So we're going to be recording our predictions for that show, yeah. And I haven't really made up my mind about a lot of the NXT card. Nor have I actually for the Rumble, really. Of like who's going to come out on top.
Pick a name out of 30.
So I really do need
that one.
I need to sit down and think about this. Because at the moment, we're currently all tied in Wrestle League. And it comes down to these final two shows.
My God.
Which I just want to add again. I would be winning if announcers' tables counted. That's all I'm saying.
Nonsense.
Hashtag announcers' tables count.
It's a desk. it's a desk and not a table.
I did have a more succinct hashtag last time, but I can't remember what it was.
Hashtag those rhombuses are desks. Our tables.
Our tables. Something like that. But what was the point I was going to make? Yeah, so once the Undisputed Era and War Raiders have kind of finished up their feud, I would like to see Street Profits kind of be moved more into that sort of top echelon of the tag team division.
Yes,
yeah. I mean, I'd imagine that like War Raiders and Undisputed Era might continue on their feud, maybe even into the Mania season. So like when they do Brooklyn 5, maybe they'll keep doing something there. But come the takeover in the summer, which would have been Brooklyn but is now wherever it is that SummerSlam's being held, I'm going to say Los Angeles, but I don't know that for sure. I might Google things live on air and not bring
Googling
up Ring of Honor, which I was just watching. Can you feel for time while I'm Googling live on air?
Yeah, certainly can. I think the thing with the like War Raiders Undisputed Era, I feel like Undisputed Era have more to do in NXT to at least even pay off the name. Like, it really felt like...
It's Canada. I was way off.
Ooh, you are.
I was way off.
One country away. my God.
I was way off.
USA, Los Angeles.
Mexico.
It's taking place in the Arctic Circle this year.
Yeah, Canada, in Toronto.
Mm.
Specifically.
So, anyway, I think Undisputed Era to pay off on the name have more to do with NXT. I still long for the day when they hold all the belts, mm-hmm. like, and that feels like kind of what they're setting up. There's a few rumors floating around that might be what's kind of going on. Seems to be the direction they're taking. Like, all their promos are currently about the fact that they're going to be dripping in gold this year. So like, maybe. And I think that is quite a smart choice, because then War Raiders can go on up to the main roster, because I just don't feel like they don't need the titles to legitimize them.
I think they need to run an NXT.
They're incredibly impressive, those two guys, and I just think you can stick them on the main roster and people will like understand who they are, what they are, very easily. So people like Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, Roderick Strong need a bit more of this sort of run to build a fan base going into it, because when they turn up on the main roster, they are just slightly smaller guys, so they're not getting over with the management, and they're not, you know, and then the crowd have to be like, okay, well, I have to get used to this technical style and all this stuff. Whereas the War Raiders come out, they've got all the sort of showy, flashy moves, but they also just do stuff where they just chuck people around.
Yeah, and
I think that's impressive. And Vince goes, oh yes, big men, I understand that.
I'd also argue as well that with War Raiders, like Undisputed Era, feel like they still have stories to tell in NXT, but once War Raiders finish up in a tag title program, it feels like they have no other stories left to tell there. Whereas Undisputed Era, I can see, because you've got all these sort of branching things. You've got Cole going after the NXT championship. You've got them going after the North American championship. Mm. As you say, dripping in gold. They still have storylines that they can do in NXT.
Yeah.
War Raiders, on the other hand, it's like, well, if they don't win the tag titles, like, well, what's next for you?
Yeah, I think they're probably... So they might... The potential is, I think, that they might win the titles here, next week, and then they'll lose them again at Mania
to the
Undisputed Era again, and then they'll go up.
Yeah.
I cannot see a situation in which the Undisputed Era go up this year.
I think they've got another
year in them. Like, it's a lot of stuff Triple H has been saying recently as well, is that he wants, you know, he sees some people as having careers that just exist in NXT and they never go to the main roster. I'm hoping that's not the case, but, you know, Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano are the examples of that. People who have had plenty of time to go up, could have gone up easily, have the fan base to do it, and they're still in NXT telling their story that seems to be planned out for quite a long time. And I think Undisputed Era are another one on that list of people who've got a longer term story to tell. That means that the Street Profits, though, should Undisputed Era retain the titles, it's a tailor made feud, because the Profits are over as a face group and the Undisputed Era are over as a heel faction. It's the very basic, it's the fundamentals of wrestling being told.
And Undisputed Era beating down Street Profits would probably garner better heat than "We forgot you and stay forgotten.
Yes, yeah.
Poor old Forgotten Sons. Like, I feel bad for them because essentially they've been saddled with a "you're not sanity" or "sanity's been called up" gimmick.
So
we're just going to put you in jackets instead, and you're basically our new sanity.
I don't think anyone like, it's such a difficult gimmick to get over as well. The idea that just like you're annoyed that you keep getting overlooked, and then every time you come out, you mention that you're overlooked and that you won't be forgotten, but you're not doing anything impressive. Like,
yeah.
you're just, you know, if they'd have come back and they'd immediately walked into the top picture, like the title picture on NXT, people would go, "Oh, I'm taking notice. The Forgotten Sons, annoyed at being forgotten, come out and do this thing." If they're just coming out and having squash matches with rubbish people, it's never going to feel like it's this big thing, like they've actually made this, they've clubbed together, they've become this gang, it's actually important. It's good. Sons of Anarchy wouldn't have worked as a biker gang if all they were doing was like stealing tricycles from like children's stores. Like,
yeah,
it's because they're doing huge drug busts or whatever. Like, you have, it has to be big for this to get over. I don't know.
And despite the fact that we've talked about them not quite a bit, but on this show, but we've had them feature on this show since you and I have been doing weekly NXT reviews, I still am so unsure when I'm writing my notes whether it's son, like I am a son to my mother and father, or the big bright ball in the sky.
Right, yeah. No,
every time
son,
I write down, I'm like, son.
Yeah.
But is it with an O or a U? Yeah. I'm still unsure.
I can never remember the... Is it Steve Cutler, is it?
Yeah.
Wesley Blake, Steve Cutler.
And Jackson Riker.
Like, Riker is... Riker's great.
He's
like,
cool, man. But he just, is cool.
But the problem is, he actually seems like... He seems less interesting because of the other two guys. Because they're always like... He's like this scary... like psychopath that they come out to the ring with, but the other two guys are just yammering the whole time, and it's like I feel like they're like, he's like Scar but with being quiet, and they're the hyenas. So,
which one's Whoopi Goldberg?
Both of them are Whoopi Goldberg.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So after that Street Profits and Chris and JC Metro, which I don't think we mentioned, we didn't really talk about a lot of Jason, Deuce and Domino, essentially.
What a terrible name.
Yeah, well, I believe they're the Metro Brothers,
the
I guess.
Metro Brothers.
Yeah, Chris and JC Metro.
The Subway guys.
Yeah, they came down, they got leather jackets and aviators and
TFL
stuff like that.
TFL lads.
The Street Profits won with a fantastic frog splash from Montez Ford.
So high.
So high. It was higher than Rob Van Dam. And then the Forgotten Sons attacked after the match. And then we cut backstage to the Angel, Kathy Kelly, interviewing Matt Riddle, who's currently embroiled in this feud with Cassius Ohno. Mm-hmm. And Riddle said that he's not medically cleared to wrestle at the moment, which is why he won't be at ringside for the match between Ohno and Lee, which is going to be main eventing this show.
Lee, who has just stood in the background, just doing some warm-ups.
Just light warm-ups.
I thought that was really weird.
I want to stretch myself to it.
It's another one of WWE's weird like framings that they do. Like the same as the watching the TV. If I was watching this TV on WWE television, I'd be doing that.
I said
it's nothing along. But like, yeah, that and then this is that exact other thing. It's like Keith Lee is doing something in the background, but sort of not really referencing the fact that he's being spoken about, and they're speaking about him as if he's not there.
And it's so weird to have a backstage segment with Keith Lee where he doesn't cut a promo. Mm. Considering how good of a promo he is, to not even have him say something is utterly bizarre.
I mean, he's a great face actor though as well, so
he really does
sell it with the whole.
He is the best. I did see someone post up on Twitter the image of Lacey Evans on SmackDown watching the TV from that sort of awkward angle. And they just said, like, I bet you this is how she watches TV at home.
She watches TV side saddle, so it's just like a lady.
I've also been told as well, I'd said it was an old-fashioned that she was drinking, but someone said it was not an old-fashioned. I can't remember what they said it was,
probably
it looked like an old-fashioned, which, given her gimmick, would sort of make sense.
Yeah, it was an orange... I don't know, it was an orange drink. It was Sunny Delight.
It wasn't a Tom Collins, I know that much. I've just misread my notes here.
Not a daiquiri.
Just misread my notes. I've written down that Alien Warlord are one of the NXT themes. It's proper generic. But I looked at it and I was like, why have I written Adam Warlock?
Adam Warlock.
There's no gauntlet going on here. But yeah, Alien Warlord are one of the NXT loud themes. Well generic. Aleister Black also cut a promo in the same room as Rob Van Dam. And he said that he will absolve Ciampa of his sins and win back his NXT championship. Proper well smoky in this room. But I thought it was a cool promo for Black, cool presentation, and I like this about NXT. Everyone has like their different area where they cut backstage promos. Gives each person a different feel, and I really really appreciate that.
Yeah, I like this promo. I thought it was pretty good. There was a lot of him doing menacing face. Maybe a bit too much, but overall it was pretty good. Maybe it just went on too long. And you sort of run out of mystique, I think, when you're just going, and you will fade to black, and I will absolve you of your sins, and there will be candles, and we will blow them out, and then I will do the last rites, and then you will be married. Sometimes you go too far into the mysticism. Like Bray Wyatt is another one that suffered from that, depending on what his new gimmick is when he comes back. But he always went so deep in on like the I am the eater of worlds and the worms will feast on your flesh and the worms will grow into chrysalises and then the chrysalises will be beautiful moth creatures that I will have flying around me with the fireflies and now I've run out of things that I'm going to
say. You're making a Pokemon reference or something. I was like, it's chrysalis
and then
a
it's a butterfruit.
Then we got an awesome promo next, which is Bianca Belair coming out. One of my favorite things about Bianca Belair is watching all the white guys try to do her dance and looking even whiter in the process. It makes me laugh every time. But Bianca Belair, like, she's an amazing in-ring performer. She's like, instantly she is taken to this sport, and she's so, so good at it. And I don't think I've ever really given her enough credit as a promo either. I thought she'd cut a really, really solid promo here. She gets her character. Not only does she get her character, she gets her character across with the way that she delivers her words and delivers the verbiage that she's been given. I'm a big, big fan of Bianca Belair.
It's her intonation that's so good. Like, it was the, you know, she got the whole aunt, da, fi, ted thing. But she does that with a lot of, like, she just puts a little bit of twist on words that just makes you go, oh, she seems quite sassy.
Yes.
Across. I don't know. She's really good. She's really good.
Really, really great. And she's, because she's got the NXT Women's Championship shot against Shayna Baszler at Phoenix. And she says that Shayna is just hiding behind her horsewomen. But at Phoenix, she will win the title because she's undefeated. But as she was about to finish the TED, Baszler, Duke, and Shafir come out. Shayna Baszler's awesome entrance music. I cannot get enough of it. It's so good. And Baszler comes out and says that she doesn't see why that Belair is the EST of NXT. Really, you're just overrated. And that led to this like dueling crowd chant
of really good.
Undefeated and overrated. It was really, really cool. I think there's a massive amount of hate going into this.
It was a really hot promo, and it made this match seem like a much bigger deal. Like, because I think both of them came out and they started off a little bit like on wobbly ground, and they both really got into their separate promos and got to this point where this big chant was going off. It was great.
Great
stuff.
It was
really, really good. There was a great line from Bianca Belair that I really liked. It was like, even though 2019 has just started, I've already got 2020 vision.
Nice.
Great.
For the NXT title.
Yeah, it's a really good, like, good little lines, like, great little things like that, saying overrated and getting the chant for that going. And then the good bit where Baszler got cocky and she was like, look, you worried about these two? She pushes them back to the corner of the ring, and as she turns around, Belair just slaps her
in the face.
Amazing.
And it's great as well, because it's little things like that that get across the storyline of this match, which is that Belair has got to overcome Duke and Shafir on the outside, the same way that Kairi Sane had to overcome them as well. So you're having them in the ring, and Belair stands tall at the end of this segment, showing that she can, if going to the right corners and everything, can overcome the fact that she's at a numbers disadvantage.
Well, and the fact that she's not scared as well, I think is the main sort of takeaway from this. Is like, you know, she took a swipe at Baszler, got out of the ring smartly, and then she was the one stood on the ramp at the end, blowing out kisses,
exactly,
waving goodbye,
swinging the hair in that, doing the dance. We then got a great little match between Adrian Jowd?
Adrian Jowd.
Jowd.
Knock off Eddie Gordo.
versus Dominic Dijakovic. Is it Kick or Ksh?
Dijakovic.
As Dijakovic. Stupid name.
It's so dumb. It's such a dumb... It's like dumb to rename him to something that nobody can say.
It's so dumb. And like, it's one thing that you and I get it wrong. I say you and I, usually me, gets this thing wrong. The commentators are getting it wrong as well. Mauro Ranallo, who after this NXT set of tapings put out a tweet apologising because he didn't think he did a good enough job on commentary, which I haven't noticed. I think he's been like, as he usually is. He was the one who was having to correct the other two divs saying his name wrong. Yeah. Like, you work for the company, you should know.
Just don't name him that. It just doesn't make any sense.
Donovan Dijak. It's so simple to say.
Yeah, but Dominic Dijak also works. It doesn't, you know, whatever way you're doing it, it still sounds... It sounds like the thing you were trying to make it sound by putting Ovich at the end.
Yeah. It's like Dijakovic. Anyway, so it was Dijakovic in this.
They're obsessed with these names, like Otis Dozovic.
He'll come up to the main roster and just be called Dominic anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know why we're all getting
Dom.
Dom's coming out here.
Yeah, it's Dom.
That's my cousin's kid's name's Dom. Dominic. Lovely double leg takedown by Jowd. This was basically MMA in a wrestling ring. I mean, I'm not an MMA expert, so it might not even be an MMA thing, but I've written down they do MMA things.
Well, I liked it. I thought it was an interesting concept for the match, I think, to go like, let's do some really technical stuff at the beginning. I don't know, like, from my limited knowledge of capoeira, which is the martial art that Jowl does, I believe, or that's why he's doing all the spinny kicks. My knowledge of that only comes from Tekken, so I feel like it's flashier than what he was doing. He was doing a lot more sort of like takedowns. I think they were saying it was like jiu-jitsu based stuff.
Yeah, I think so as well.
I like this idea. I quite like matches where you're chopping down the big guy if you're doing it smart. Like Kyle O'Reilly is one person who is fantastic at limb manipulation stuff that, you know, can take someone much bigger down and work them over in the right way. Jowd was doing the same thing in this match here, and it worked really, really well. I'm just not sure that Dijakovic needs that right at this second. I just feel like this match, while good, I don't feel like they've been pushing Jowd enough for it to be like, it shouldn't have been as back and forth as it was.
As competitive as it was,
It should have just been a squash match for Dijakovic here, or put him in there against someone else. There are other people on the roster who've been built up to be pretty good names. Not Kona Reeves.
Tesco's
like,
finest.
Yeah, anyone else, put him in there, have this competitive match, have him come out on top, and he looks really good.
Yeah.
There are plenty of names in NXT that you could use. Like, Keith Lee would have been a good one in this scenario. If he's going to take losses anyway, like, put him in there against Dijakovic.
Yeah.
Because they could have a really even match, but Dijakovic just happens to come out on top. No one looks any worse for it, really.
Yeah. It wasn't, like... It was a fine little match, I suppose. Dijakovic sort of like took over. The crowd was silent for this, though. Like, he did a throwing suplex. Jad made a bit of a comeback, and then Dijakovic laid him out with the clothesline, which he calls the Bloodline, which could be a Slayer reference. And then he hits the reverse GTS for the win. Still think the reverse GTS is a wicked move.
That is awesome. I also like his time to fly.
his little throwing suplex.
His
thing.
Throwing suplex.
Yeah, it's weird as well. Like, you say capoeira. I mean, I've got very limited knowledge of capoeira. Like, my old housemate did it, but like, he did it after I'd moved out, so I just remember seeing him do it on Facebook and stuff. But I think capoeira is like, it's a non-contact thing.
Yeah,
it's almost like, it's basically dancing, right? But with kicks and whatnot. It's basically wrestling, but like with no contact.
Perfect for this.
Exactly.
You scare them until they. Dijakovic. If I wanted to hit you, I could. Look at it.
Dijakovic will be part of Worlds Collide, the NXT versus NXT UK versus 205 Live competition that is so important it is yet to be mentioned on any show.
Yes.
Not even on this one. And they're a part of it. Dijakovic is in this tournament. So is Keith Lee.
And Humberto Carrillo, who was...
Well, is he announced for it again?
Oh, no, they haven't. But he was announced. He was announced, and then they took him out. And then he debuted on 205 Live on Tuesday.
Yep.
But he's also on NXT
this week. Yeah.
So who's he with?
I think, well, 205 Live is an actual live show. I feel so like that's a more common,
I think so. Next week he'll probably be on 205, and then that announcement will come out ahead of Access, which is on Saturday.
I think it could be on Sunday as well.
I think it's like a two-day tournament, so it's like Saturday,
it is a two-day
Sunday,
tournament. Yeah,
like, I don't know.
It'll be on the network.
I mean, it's probably going to be really good.
No problem.
But you just don't care, do
what
you?
Is like? Like, you and I were talking about this on the Patreon podcast that we did. Like, it's a great concept, and you're taping it for the network, but you're not airing it on the network when it airs. Mm. You're airing it at some point in the future, big air quotes for podcast listeners. Mm. So by that point, we'll all know who wins and no one will watch it.
Yeah,
so why bother taping it?
It's really good people, isn't it? It's really, really. And also, it's for the prize is great. Like, the winner gets to take a title shot for any of the three titles that
Keith
they want.
Keith Lee could go after the Cruiserweight Championship.
Yeah, I know, that's
wanted.
What I was like. Dozovic could as well. Like,
Dozovic, main roster's Dozovic in the NXT brackets.
WWE Raw or SmackDown's Dozovic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah! I'm going after whatever.
I'm going for the women's tag team titles.
Yeah. We got a really cool video package next from the War Raiders. And they were like in the middle of a field. It was nighttime. Aww. They had like a sort of like funeral pyre thing with chairs with the Undisputed Era logo on there. I've written it's like a Viking funeral, but that's not right, is it? Because that's when they go out to sea.
But I think that's what it was meant to be alluding to. So a Viking funeral is that you light a longboat on fire, isn't it?
You push it out to sea.
And
if I remember rightly.
Yeah, but I imagine a similar thing. I mean, in God of War, the Viking Norse one, he just does a funeral pyre. So I think a pyre is a normal sort of Viking funeral rite.
Is that the new one?
Yes.
Oh, okay, not played that. Yeah. I mean, I haven't played
it's
any of
very
yet.
Good.
I haven't played any of the others either, so I don't know why I asked.
Yeah. Is it the new one? Well, the old ones were the Greek gods, Luke. Come on.
Okay, well, thank you for clearing
it's
that
a
up.
Different pantheon.
Come on, catch up.
It's 2019 now.
Does he have a whip?
Yes, he does.
I'm more interested
spoiler.
Now.
Spoiler. that is quite a big spoiler.
But it was like, they say that they respect, and I like these promos when people say like, I respect you, Undisputed Era. I respect the things that you've done. You've taken bits out of us, because it puts over the people that you're feuding with. You're not going like, do you know, you're rubbish, you.
Yeah.
Like, because then if you lose to them, you also look rubbish. So we're doing Royal Rumble 2000 for the $5 Patreon podcast, which will be out next week. It should be, because we're going to record it on Friday. So could it be out on Friday? And like, the promo for that pay-per-view with Triple H and Cactus Jack, the opening half of that video package is Cactus Jack going like, Triple H, you are the game, you are the WWF champion, you're so good, you're this. And Triple H going like, Cactus Jack, you're the king of the deathmatch, you're this, you're sick and sadistic, and I'm, you know, and it's putting over each other, and then you flip it and be like, I'm Cactus Jack, I am sick and twisted, I'm the king of the deathmatch, I am Triple H, I'm the game. Putting both of yourselves over, and that, it's one of the best video packages ever. So I really like this package, because it was War Raiders going like, you guys are really, really good.
Yeah.
You're awesome, and we respect that. but come Phoenix, we're going to take the titles off of you.
But that's what I mean. It's like, it works for certain characters to put everyone else down. It works for Becky Lynch's character to put everyone else down because she's pure ego.
Yeah.
But for most other people, like Ronda Rousey, on Raw, is saying to the likes of Sasha Banks, I really respect you, I really want to blah, 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 and that's why it will be an honour to tap you out with an armbar. But then on Twitter, she's like throwing shade, being, you know, like taking people down, trying to do that stuff. And it's like, actually, Ronda Rousey's character should be quite respectful because she's a competitor. Like, she should be trying to challenge the best people to prove that she is the baddest woman on the planet. But be like, no, I really respect everything you've done. You've done way more in this company than I have. However, I am the future, and I'm going to take you down for those reasons.
Yeah, totally.
But I love it when people, like, when people just make it like it's a proper fight. Like, you know, you don't want to be like, you're rubbish. And it's like, well, then why are you having a match against them? Why do you even care?
And it's funny as well that you say that I like it when it's treated like a proper fight, because this was two people out in the middle of a field doing a Viking.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. But that's... I mean, in real life...
Yeah.
He had a Viking wedding, so it doesn't
really make, like, make any sense. I mean, my note here is, like, this was very goofy. It was very Triple H, but I loved it.
But it was,
I thought it was great.
It's true to life. Yeah. Like,
there works for their character.
So this is the thing. The one thing I think about this, though, watching this promo, Hansen's too sweet.
He's got a wonderful little voice, hasn't he?
He sounds so nice. He's like the friendliest man.
Because you've got a Rogo like, we respect you. Yeah. We respect you. And you got Hansen going like, but we're going to beat you at the pay-per-view if you don't mind.
Yeah. And that is undisputed.
Undisputed.
Undisputed. Undisputed.
Now our era, if you don't mind. Your era is going to end and we're going to take over.
He's so nice.
He's lovely. I'd love to go out for a beer with them. Mm. I think it'd be a proper lark.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really fun.
Skoll.
Yeah. I mean, they'd probably drink out of, like, you know, proper, like, tankards and things like that. Flagons. Mm. That's what you want to be drinking out of. Ales that are made out of, like, beer piss or sort of bear piss.
Beer piss.
That's Foster's, isn't it?
That's just... Yeah, but then you're just taking back in your own nutrients.
They showed a highlight package for NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, including the debut of Volta, who is the best.
Mm. You mean Blackpool, not Brooklyn?
Yes. I've written Brooklyn in my notes.
I was like, Volta wasn't in Brooklyn.
I did mean Blackpool. Mm. Yeah, that'll teach me. Yeah, I was just so excited to see the debut of Volta again. I did actually watch Blackpool on Sunday while I was tidying up around the house. And really, like, the tag match, the opening tag match was just like, I was awesome. The rest of the show didn't really grab much of me, didn't really grab any of my attention. But I would say,
Devlin versus Balor was wicked.
I thought the final 10 minutes of the Pete Dunne match was really, really great. And then the debut of Volta, like, that really was like a setup moment cool and be like, hello, I'm taking notice.
You know what? I'd forgotten.
Well, the Volta debuted.
No, I'd forgotten that that was a possibility. But going into the show, I was like, what were they like, you know? And then I heard about it and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that he'd signed. Like,
yeah, I was expecting him to be sat in the crowd, but this is a much better way to do
it. Oh, it's wicked.
And like, I'm not kidding, but setting up Volta versus Pete Dunne. Like, Ollie didn't want to go to Blackpool. The reason why we didn't go to that show is because Ollie didn't want to go. Because he just said, it's not a main event I want to see. So we didn't go. But I think a main event of Volta and Pete Dunne, that is the sort of main event that may make Davis, who does ultimately make all the decisions around here, go like, yeah, okay, let's go to that show then.
It's the perfect main event. I mean,
it's a perfect main event.
And also, Volta is the person who should topple Pete Dunne.
Yeah, he should be.
Freeing up Pete Dunne also to go to the main roster for a bit, or whatever their plan is, because Pete Dunne's a future Universal Champion in my mind, like, easily.
Yeah, absolutely. Volta should be the guy to take the belt on Pete Dunne in his like 600-day reign. Speaking of really, really good stuff, Johnny Gargano was in action next, taking on our boy Humberto Carrillo. I thought we wouldn't see him on NXT again after his 205 Live call-up. I wasn't sure if they taped anything for him in NXT.
No.
Thankfully, God bless the taping schedule.
So good.
We got to see him here. That handsome little devil that he is. As tall, he's great. Bloody love Carrillo.
He's got some wicked moves.
He's like, awesome.
He does everything like so crisp. Like, all of his moves are just like that. Springboard arm drag that he does.
Oh, the height that he gets.
But it's beautiful. Like, it's just like,
yeah, it is so, it's effortless.
So I was getting images for my news earlier today, in which I do a quick rundown of what happened in NXT. And I got the image of that arm drag, and there's they've got a very good shot of it from across the ring. Carrillo perfectly poised in the air like this, Gargano holding onto his arm, ready to be dragged. But Gargano's just looking at him like an angel. it's incredible.
He is
it's
a little
so
bit
good.
Though. He's a handsome little champ, and he's great. And I like that they built this match as well very smartly. In the right at the start, Nigel McGuinness said that Carrillo is a lot like Ricochet.
Mm.
So this is going to be a really good test for Johnny Gargano. And I was like, what a brilliant little simple story to tell. It explains why this match is happening. Mm. It explains like why the character of Johnny Gargano would want this match.
Mm.
Because he wants to show that, hey, if this guy's like you, I can beat him. And yes, therefore, I can beat you as well and take your title. I thought it was a really, really smart match. And it's kicked off brilliantly as well because Johnny Wrestling locks in an arm lock and just goes, Johnny Wrestling!
I think the story, beyond that story of this match as well, that they told it well through the match, that Johnny was struggling with this sort of innovative offense of someone like Carrillo, like dealing with an actual high flyer.
Yeah.
He was really struggling to sort of get a foothold in this match, but as soon as he did, he turned it around.
Yeah,
and that was the, you know, that was the key, is that like Johnny is so good that when Johnny does start doing Johnny stuff,
yeah,
you got to watch out because he can put you away in about four moves.
And I think this match as well, and I'd certainly compare this to the Rey Andrade match from SmackDown.
Mm.
It should have been the main event of this show.
Yes, definitely.
I really think it should have been the main event of this show. But there was some really, really great stuff in here. So yeah, as you say, that like Carrillo was sort of running wild with lucha things in this high springboard arm drag. It's so awesome. And he starts making a comeback and hits like a springboard back elbow, a missile drop kick, and this roll through moonsault. So incredibly athletic. But Gargano gets the boots up after the moonsault, hits a super kick in the lawn dart, slingshot DDT, and wins. And then he looks into the camera right after and he challenges Ricochet to show up next week.
Mm.
Great, great stuff. And they've announced, Willie Regal announced on...
Big Willie Reigs.
Big Willie Reigs announced on Twitter that it will be Gargano versus Ricochet at Phoenix.
Mm.
Which sounds like an amazing match.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, please. Backstage interview, or backstage promo, rather, with Tommaso Ciampa kissing his title. And he says that Black keeps calling him the puppet master. Well, you, Black, are the ultimate puppet.
Mm.
And that he's been playing him however he wants. And he says, and I love this as well, because Aleister Black, in his promo, was like, I want to fight now. Like, I don't want to wait till Phoenix. You know, I want to have this fight now. Ciampa, with this absolutely amazing line, says, like, yeah, we could fight now. But I'm going to wait until the main event of Phoenix, because that's what a main event player does.
Yes.
Oh, so
that's
good.
Yeah.
Excellent little dig at Black as well, who, as NXT champion, never main evented a takeover.
Mm.
So, so good. And he said, be careful what you wish for. Thought it was great.
Oh, I love Ciampa.
Love Ciampa. Also, big fan of the Velveteen Dream, who had a wicked little video package putting himself
over. We've seen this one before, but it's very good.
Have we seen it before?
I don't know. I've seen it before because of the 2018.
2019.
I love it. It's so funny.
He's so good.
I think it was. I think it was on NXT maybe last week or the week before.
God.
Or maybe in that big just recap episode, it was in there somewhere.
Oh, did I miss it when I was doing some skipping around?
Possibly, yeah.
Could be.
Making a tea, probably.
And he said, if you don't believe the hype, you can ask Hulk Hogan, mm-hmm. Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle, John Cena, or Triple H. He promises big things for 2019, and he'll be in action next week.
2019.
And in our main event, it was the continuation of that Cassius Ohno Matt Riddle storyline, where Ohno took on Limitless Keith Lee in a disappointingly boring match.
Two big guys doing big guy things at each other.
Yeah, disappointing.
I thought it was good. I just think it was a bit rote.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
It's a real shame. Like, power shown by Lee early, sort of teased a dive, but Ohno got out of the way, and then Ohno took over and sort of like, but he took over with chin locks and rest holds and wasn't anything particularly exciting. And then Lee made a comeback for a little bit, and then essentially, like, at the end, Lee was making his big comeback, and he hit the overhand chops and the pounce, and then Ohno sort of grabs the ropes and pushes Lee into the referee. Low blow by Ohno because the referee was distracted. Rolling elbow, and he won. Cassius Ohno got a win. Which doesn't happen very often. But another loss for Keith Lee, which they brought up on commentary, because they said that Lee lost to Lars Sullivan.
In a row now, yeah.
That's two in a row. They said, yeah, last time we saw Keith Lee was losing to Lars Sullivan, and he's losing again here. That's got to be playing on his mind.
I really want to see Keith Lee in a like even competition against a smaller guy. Who's really good? Like your Johnny Gargano's, your
Umberto
like
Carrillo.
Umberto, oh my god, I would love to see that.
Yeah, right.
But like any, I think anyone of that sort of build, I think you'll get a much better match out of it. I think this match, because it wasn't really, also it wasn't really about Keith Lee. Sadly, it was just, you know, this was just part of the story of Matt Riddle going forward, which is kind of a shame. But yeah, I would love to see an even match where someone is fighting from sort of underneath the power imbalance with Lee, and then Lee step up doing all this crazy stuff. Lee steps up, starts doing all of his crazy stuff. That would be a much more interesting match. Here, it's just two big guys who are very athletic big guys and can do a lot of more impressive stuff that, you know, some guys their size cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing that at each other, and actually that didn't really work here, because it didn't feel like a game. They could have pitched it as a game of one-upmanship almost here, that, you know, like Cassius does something a bit freakish for his size, Keith Lee does something a bit freakish for his size,
yeah.
Cassius does boom 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 boom, and you escalate until you get to this point where it seems like Keith's about to win, bumps the referee, Cassius low blow, rolling elbow,
and I think that's kind of like sort of the problem with this match. It wasn't because Ono's great, Lee's amazing. It's just that the match was kind of pitched wrong.
Yes.
As you say, it was more or less like chin locks and rest holds. And I don't think that's the match. Because I know that Lee can have these sort of matches with these bigger guys. The Tomohiro Ishii match and the two that he had with Ishii at Rev Pro match, it shows that Keith Lee can have these sorts of matches with guys that are like his size, like his stature. But that's not what this match was. And as you say, it's not a great showing for Lee, because he's not the focus of this. He is a cog in the Riddle Ono machine.
Yes.
He is just a small part of this.
The placeholder Matt Riddle feud until Matt Riddle goes into the main title pitch.
Exactly.
You've got to imagine.
And also, like, Ono needed to win here because you need to put over Ono in order for Riddle to beat him at TakeOver.
Yeah.
So if Lee won here, then what's the point of having match?
Do you know what? I think they should have just done a disqualification finish. They should have just gone, Cassius just goes too far, gets DQ'd. Lee then gets a win. And it's not like a straight line. Even though, obviously, Ono cheated, so Lee's pretty protected here. I just think you could have gone further and just gone, you know what, Ono just gets himself like DQ'd.
Yeah.
Then Riddle runs down trying to break it all up. And you can have the exact same story play out. And it's just a little bit less damaging to Lee.
I would agree, yeah, because after the match,
he looked a bit like a sucker as well, because he was winning until that. Like, he was on top until the point where they bumped the referee. He went, walked over, stood quite far away,
yeah,
and sort of poured.
Ref, are you
like,
fine,
he
mate?
He sort of poured at his back, like, get up, man.
Come on, man.
And then, like, perfectly, so Ono could bring his arm through. But yeah, it just felt a bit like, oh, you dope.
It was a bit of a lackluster finish, and after the match, Matt Riddle runs down. The referees are trying to stop him, but he just sort of powers through them. And he's not medically cleared, and he
on
gets
the speed
the
of his flip flop.
He gets down to the ring, and he chases Ono off, and that was where the show ended. So, yeah, I mean, I think there was some really good stuff on the show. The Bianca Belair promo, I thought, was great.
Mm-hmm.
Gargano versus Carrillo was awesome. I wasn't massively sold on the main events. Love the Street Profits.
Their match was good.
Yes.
As in, they made it very enjoyable to watch them
because
beat
they
down
are
some guys.
Amazing.
Yes, yeah.
But unfortunately, the Forgotten Sons are not a great feud for them.
Yes.
So,
a bit of a dead end.
Yeah, a bit of a dead end. And Dijakovic is always fun, I guess. So, that's all we've got time for on this show. Unless you had any final thoughts for NXT?
No.
So I've got this email in here from Pete. Said, howdy, whichever combination of gents it is today, but not hi to Randy. As someone who has played Pokemon since they were about 5, obsessed over it, and has a tattoo related to it, hearing Ollie discuss his adventures of Let's Go Pikachu was great. And he seemed interested in the theory that Cubone and Kangaskhan,
yeah.
Yep. So as WrestleTalks, and this is where I thought it'd be interesting, because Pete is one of our website writers.
Yes.
But I think he's written something here that you may dispute. So, as WrestleTalk's resident pokey nerd, here's some stuff he and or Laurie might enjoy.
Go on then.
That's why I thought I would save this.
We're quite cross now.
Yeah, like,
I'm fumes.
Try and impress me.
Yeah, go on then.
The legendary Pokemon Mewtwo is said to have been cloned using DNA from Mew, but there were some failed attempts before Mewtwo was born. Do you know any of this? It was a nod of the head
on
an audio format.
Yeah, sorry.
There's a theory that suggests Ditto is a failed Mewtwo clone, since only Ditto and Mew can learn transform by regular methods, but both are the same color, brackets pink, and they are shiny colors too. Their shiny colors are the same too, brackets blue.
I've heard that one before.
Okay.
I've watched a lot of Did You Know Gaming, so.
Clefable?
Yep.
Is that right?
The unevolved form of... is that Cleffa? Is it Clefable? Yeah, Clefable is the evolved form of Clefairy.
Okay. Clefable and Gengar are said to be two halves of the same Pokemon, each representing light and dark, respectively.
They have very similar silhouettes. Why people believe that.
Pikachu wasn't originally supposed to be the mascot of the franchise, and Ash's partner in the Pokemon anime, Jigglypuff, was.
Mm-hmm.
Detective Jigglypuff.
Yeah.
What a film that would have been. and tune in next time for your next dose of useless Pokemon facts and theories, which are mediocre at best. Lots of love. That's from Pete.
Thank you very much, Pete.
The best website writer we have. Do you have any other Pokemon? What's your favourite bit of Pokemon trivia that you can give us?
What's my favourite bit of Pokemon?
I'm going to save that, Pete, because I'm going to tell that to Ollie when we go back to the studio, because he doesn't listen to this.
Oh, what's Pokemon trivia in myself? I felt, well, Cubone and Kangaskhan was my favourite one, I think, because it was... one of my favourite theories about Pokemon, and one that people obviously obsessed over in the games, was the... And I don't know if you've ever heard of this or if you've played the games.
I've not played a Pokemon.
So there is a bit. There's a bit in one of the cities where you go on a ship called the SS Anne. And Mew, originally, it was outside the original 150 Pokemon in the game, was given away as part of like special giveaways where you would take your Game Boy in, hook it up, and they would give you Mew downloaded to your game. People believed that you could get Mew in the game naturally. It was just hidden somewhere.
Mm.
And people obsessed over this. And they became incredibly obsessed with this one particular truck, which was on the dock outside of the SS Anne, where you take the SS Anne to another city in the game. Because most of the assets in Pokemon games repeat themselves, as they do in many games. Mm-hmm. Like it's a quick way to... develop games
save space.
Essentially in safe space. You just reuse assets.
The clouds and the bushes in Super Mario are the same drawing.
Exactly, just colour swapped. This truck was bespoke, but did nothing. So everyone was obsessed with the idea that Mew was beneath the truck, because why would you draw the truck?
Yeah, a different truck.
A different truck. Why would you not just be like, oh, it's a bench. We already have graphics for benches. We already have graphics for like small trees and bushes.
Yeah.
Put some of those there. No, this truck was there. Everyone just belligerently believed that Mew was under the truck. Yeah, I love it. I love how gamers just fill stuff in like that.
That is wonderful. We've got this email here from Shivam Sharma. Gets in touch quite a lot. Thank you very much, Shivam. He says, hi, Luke, Ollie, and Laurie. As Luke is vegan, I'm not, I'm vegetarian. I wanted to ask him whether or not he tried Indian vegetarian foods or not. I'm a vegetarian as well, and like most people in India are vegetarians, that's why there's a ton of vegetarian options. I would recommend you eat paneer tikka, which I think you will like because everyone loves paneer, and it's very healthy for you. 100 grams of paneer has 22 grams of protein, and it has zero carbs, and it tastes awesome. IMO. Thank you very much. I have eaten paneer, actually, since I switched to being a vegetarian.
Mm.
I had to find, because chicken dansak was my curry of choice, so I had to find a new version of that. So I actually went with tikka paneer. And because my wife orders it's just the rice dish.
A biryani.
Biryani, thank you very much. I knew it began with bin. I kept thinking Balti, and I knew it wasn't that. Biryani, she gets the vegetable curry sauce with it, so I then just take the vegetable curry sauce because I like a saucy curry. So I like paneer, but I'm not... I think it's a bit much.
A saag paneer, very nice.
Yeah.
A spinachy one, I like that.
I might switch to that. But paneer, I like it sometimes, don't like it all the time.
I feel like whenever I have curry, I always end up eating like lamb, just because I don't eat lamb in the rest of life. Day to day, I don't eat lamb. So like whenever I'm getting curry and it's an option, I'm like, oh, ooh, lamb. How novel.
How novel. This is a great email here from Robert. Dear Luke and Laurie, /possibly Ollie, but definitely not Randy. After listening to the previous NXT review, I had to look up several things that you were talking about on the show because it piqued my interest. Here is the list that I was able to come up with, and forgive me if I spell them wrong. So this is off the back of you and I having that top 10 intro conversation about trips into work and office etiquette.
What is Costa?
So he said, cheese toasty, it's a grilled cheese sandwich. Mm-hmm. So essentially, he's Americanizing the British things that we were talking about for any of our American listeners. And this is his research. So it's funny because he's done American research, but unfortunately, we don't know if what he's saying is correct because I don't know what the thing he might be talking about is.
Grilled cheese sandwich, I know what that is.
Grilled cheese sandwich, basically a cheese toasty.
Yes.
Bourbon biscuits, he suggests, is a chocolate cookie sandwich with chocolate in the middle between them. They sound really good. They sure look good.
I would say...
Cookie sounds too, like... I wouldn't say cookie, though.
They don't really... But they don't call them biscuits, because biscuits is a different thing.
Yeah.
So cookie's correct. Like, it's like an Oreo, but the chocolate powder used is lighter.
Yeah.
So it's not actually, like, as dark chocolate. And then the middle cream is also chocolate.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice biscuits, a coconut-flavoured cookie that is square with sugar on top.
Do you know what? I don't even know what the flavour of nice biscuits is.
I don't eat them because they're crap.
Yeah, they're rubbish, rubbish. So no one has it. Might be coconut.
The thing is,
I like coconut. I hate nice biscuits.
I'm one of the few people that likes when the selection box gets down to just the bounties because I quite like a bounty.
You monster.
I like a bounty.
Ugh.
Plain digestives, a wholemeal cookie that is supposed to fill you up throughout the day. For us in the States, it's almost like something akin to a Belvita breakfast bar.
Yes, it is very similar to a Belvita breakfast bar.
Custard cream, it seems like it's the vanilla version of a bourbon biscuit. Nailed it. Yeah. Absolutely nailed it. That's exactly what it is. And a jammy dodger, a shortbread cookie sandwich with strawberry jam as the filling, usually with a heart cut out of the top cookie. Mm. Yeah.
Custard cream could also be described as the albino bourbon biscuit.
I really appreciate the podcast every week as I drive a lot for work, and your podcast really keep me entertained on my drives. Over Christmas, I really enjoyed the super episode of Big Apple Takedown as it kept me going for 3 days. Anyway, love the content you guys put out. Keep up the very consistent work. Thanks, Robert. Well, thank you for your email, Robert. If you enjoyed the Big Apple Takedown, we're going to be relaunching our Patreon today. And from now on, $10 backers will get the Ramble Club, which is essentially just chatting about nonsense and reading Big Apple Takedown. But with three of us.
Whoa.
You and I did the test episode for it last week, and it was good fun.
It was fun, yeah.
And essentially, it's a lot more reading a Big Apple Takedown and a lot more making fun of it.
And booze.
And booze, indeed. I did have another email that I was pretty much sure was waiting for. Where is it? I'm sure I had an email that was like specifically for NXT. Or was it an NXT joke? Aha, here we go. It's because it was a joke sent in to us that were D&D based. So this comes in from the...
So very tangentially NXT related.
It was, because it's the only show where we'll talk about D&D. This one comes in from the Cosmic Anvil. Dear Luke and Laurie, I hope you enjoy these D&D jokes. How do you get a D&D player to go out on a date with you?
I don't know.
You just ask them for a D8. It's pretty good.
That is good.
Why did the necromancer hate the pyromancer?
I don't know.
Because he raised the dead. Hope you got a laugh out of them. I certainly did the first one. The second one was a bit weaker, but the first one was very, very good. I think we may have to draw it to a close there, which is a shame, because we did actually have a lot to talk about in terms of D&D, because we are back in the world.
We're back in the game.
We are back in the game, starting our second fish campaign after our side quest in the Feywilds.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our second stab at it on
it was,
Monday.
Yeah.
Now doing it in a public place.
I know, yeah.
Which is hampering, because some people were asking us about the recordings we were going to do, because we were going to do it as like a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're in a public place that's a lot harder.
Yes.
Because they are half-orc house who we used to do it with, he's moving and his wife is pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So we just felt a bit bad about constantly going back to their
absolutely.
House, staying there and just being generally awkward.
Yes.
So, yeah, we're doing it in a public place now, which makes recording a bit slightly difficult.
However, we might be looking... I guess, I think the kind of plan at the moment that I'm chatting with the DM about is to do some sort of one-shot campaign where we probably write new characters and start from there and do that.
Which would be good fun.
Yeah, because I think actually if we were going to record what we already do beyond talking about it on this, it's quite hard to keep up with because there's a lot of... back referencing.
There's in jokes.
A lot of stuff has happened, I think, is the other problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you were wondering, like, what happened when we got out of the Feywild, I'm just going to give you this. 20 years later. That's all I'm going to say.
Dun, dun, dun.
They all thought we were dead. We're like hailed as heroes.
Except me. I was there the whole time.
Poor old
you. He's very cross.
It's a good job. It turns out you're a half-elf.
I know.
And they all can live for many, many years.
There were secrets.
So many secrets. So we'll try and talk about that next week because we'll have had our third session because we're playing again on Monday.
Hey, you know, you might get a chance to chat to me and find out what actually happened because we haven't really had the time so far.
No, I haven't. No,
we've immediately gone straight on a mission.
Exactly. We've gone into a ghost town which is inhabited by spirits that are apparently are now trying to attack us and we're sort of trapped a little bit. But yeah. As long as we can get into the sewers.
We'll work it out.
But if we get into the sewers, we'll fight zombies.
Well, I don't think so. I think the sewers has been set up as the place to go.
Yeah.
I like the best. My favourite bit of the last session of D&D that we had was we're a very belligerent party and we're quite rude. And we met a guy called Captain Bernard, who's no longer a captain, but he had been the captain of the town's guard in this city that we went back to, which was the town from the first campaign that had been razed to the ground by the Order of the Crimson Star, who are sort of a holy militia who
don't like magic.
They cleanse towns if magic users are found within them.
And we had used quite a lot of magic, and then we
ran out of the town, leaving it to get razed. We've now returned. It is a ghost town. Bernard has lived there the entire time, has turned mildly undead from the looks of it.
He's like half undead because your alarm bells were met. Your spidey sense was
going off. Yeah, my spidey sense was going off. So he's half undead or something. And he, when he met us, was quite cross.
Oh, he was super annoyed. Back.
He was like, "You killed this town, blah, blah, blah." And I immediately turned it round to be like, "We're all to blame, Bernard. You were the guard of, you know, captain.
You let
them
in.
You were the captain of the guard. You let the Crimson Order in. You were letting the Reeve be corrupt. You could have done anything at any time to stop this happening. We wouldn't have had to go so far in our attempts to save the town, accidentally getting it entirely killed, if you had been better at your job." To which the DM was just like, "I just wasn't expecting to lose the moral high ground."
So that is all we've got time for on this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Ollie and I will be back on Saturday for the magazine show version of this, where I don't know what we're going to be talking about, actually. We haven't decided. I need to kind of like draw up a document for it. But we'll find out. If you are one of our pledge hammers, you may also have access to our review of Royal Rumble 2000, but that's, I can't guarantee that at the moment because Ollie hasn't watched it yet. But we're going to try and record that tomorrow, and if we can, then I might be able to launch it tomorrow. But that is all we've got time for. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.